Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Reid Graff. Maybe you've done it already. Maybe you're planning to go this weekend or in the coming weeks. Apple picking is a quintessential fall activity and almost always results in a bounty of apples in your kitchen with which you may make apple-infused foods like pies, crumbles, breads. How do you know when an apple is ripe for picking, and what should you do with your apples this year? Well, we have two of the region's finest apple farmers in the studio to answer your questions about the fruit that keeps the doctor away. Peter Ten Eyck runs Indian Ladder Farms in Altamont, New York. The apple farm has been in his family since 1915. Its convenient location at the base of the Helderberg Escarpment makes it a perfect place to grow apples. Ken Migliarelli runs Migliarelli Farm in northern Dutchess County. He's been on this program before. He knows the drill extremely well. Migliarelli Farm has been growing since 1933 when its founder, Angelo, brought a few broccoli rob seeds to New York from Italy. You can find his fruits and veggies at farmers markets all over the region. Peter and Ken, welcome to the show. Nice to have you here.
All right.
Hey, how you doing?
Don't sound too enthused, Peter. I'm
forward-leaning.
You're happy to be here?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough. Well, you had a drone on your... we'll get into that in a minute. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. If you have an Apple question or a comment or you want to throw something in, you can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Tweet us, @WAMCVoxPop. Go to our Facebook page if you wish. There is a Vox Pop wall post at WAMC Radio. You can post comments at the bottom of today's show page on our website, wamc.org/voxpop. But by all means, call if you want to, 1-800-348-2551. Peter Ten Eyck, you had a drone. Why is there a drone at Indian Ladder Farms?
Well, it's really a mystery to me, although the New York State Farm Bureau was trying to get some footage together for a new video movie kind of thing that they've got, and we're close by, so we were an easy target.
So they brought a drone, and I saw the video.
Yes.
It's quite something to see.
Yeah, well, there's always a game to be played at Indian Ladder, and this was today's game, was to have this thing buzzing around through the orchard while people are trying to pick apples.
So everybody was ducking.
Yeah.
You want to play the sound? I was quite impressed with the sound.
Well, I can do that.
All right.
I can find a picture.
This is the drone at Indian Ladder Farms today. This is breaking news here on WAMC. Amazing.
Sounds like a swarm of bees.
Yeah, it does. Well, we have that problem, too. Sounds like we're pollinating.
All right. Well, that was good, you see. And if you actually could see the video, it's even more exciting. But the sound was great. Ken, what's new with you? You were on in the spring. We did a show about farmers markets, right?
Yep, and the Rhinebeck Farmers Market and other local farmers markets. This is our craziest time right now, like, for most farms also.
Yeah.
I mean, besides apples, you know, we just got done picking pears, and, you know, I grow about 350 acres of vegetables, so tomatoes are coming in, peppers, eggplant.
Tomatoes still coming in?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have them till frost. When's that going to happen, you know?
Sheesh. Well, I don't think it's going to be this weekend.
Well, I'm hoping the end of October, if possible.
Yeah, lots of luck.
Yeah.
So how's the apple crop this year, gentlemen?
Well, one thing about farming, Ken, I think you'll realize, is we're always whining about something.
Yeah. Well, that's like radio, too. We're always whining about
it. But we've got, because we had, the way it works is we have a somewhat smaller crop this year because we had a big crop last year. And the reason we had a big crop last year was the year before that we froze out. So in the year you don't have any apples, the orchard responds by having a huge crop. The next year you try to control it. And then if you get too big of a crop the next year, then you end up with a smaller one the year after that.
So next year should be a bumper crop.
Yeah, but we're going to control it so it's not too big. So
right.
We get out of this
right.
Oscillating of crops.
How about you? Same thing, Ken?
Crop, we probably have a decent crop, probably 85-90% of a normal crop.
Mm-hmm. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. I know, Peter, you brought some apples with you, and these are new.
Well, the agenda here is that I could think of two better people, one professional and one professional because he's a consumer.
that I am.
I have a new apple variety, just my first crop this year. It's a new to New York State. It's a New York State apple. It just got named last August. I've planted them, and now this is my first crop this year, and they're called Snapdragon.
Ooh, Snapdragons. All right, let's try them. Let's take a call or two, and then we will try the Snapdragon. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Andy in Stockbridge. Andy.
Hi.
You're on.
Oh, great. Well, I called in because I heard Ken was going to be there.
Oh, yeah, he's here. He's here.
Hi, Ken. I have a specific question. I came down to Migliarelli's, sorry, for the first time ever in July, and I got a gallon of apple cider. And actually, I forgot I had this gallon of cider. It sat in my fridge for about a month. And then a few weeks ago in August, rather, I went to drink it, and when I opened, I took a sip, and it actually tasted like I had a hard bite, as if it were alcoholic. And I like that a lot. I like hard apple cider. So I drank the whole thing, and I felt a little kind of goofy, as if I'd had a drink. And I'm calling to ask if it's possible if the apple cider had actually fermented into something alcoholic, or if this was in my head.
Hang on. You drank a whole gallon in one sitting? Let's start with that.
Of course. Yeah. My girlfriend falls asleep earlier than I do, so I usually have a few evening hours.
All right. The girlfriend's asleep. Hey, I'll drink a gallon of cider. Perfect.
It was a nice treat.
All right. Yeah. So what do you think, Ken?
A gallon of cider, it's a... surprising you weren't in the bathroom for a while.
All right. Anyway. Thank you, Ken. I appreciate that.
You get a medical condition called the green apple quick step.
Wow, this show's off the rails already. It's only 2:14. All right, so can you ferment it that quick?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
I mean, we don't put any preservative in the cider, so... And your refrigerator probably is not as cold as my cooler. We keep the cooler at 33, and you're probably running around 45 degrees, so absolutely it will turn if you hold on to it.
And is that a right thing that regularly happens?
Absolutely. Yeah, if you just keep buying it ahead of schedule, and you'll have a nice supply all the time.
It takes about a month to do that, Peter?
Well, the secret is that Ken and I both use the same process. We don't heat the soy cider and boil it. We use an ultraviolet light procedure, which shines ultraviolet light. I call it a little shaft of sunlight on your cider.
This is to pasteurize?
Yes, to pasteurize it. And it kills all of God's little creatures in there. And it also knocks the yeast population down to certainly a hundredth of what it might be otherwise. So while all of the E. coli and things have been killed off, there's a little bit of residual wild yeast in there, and over a period of time it'll eventually build up. Now the yeast, when it starts to consume the sugar in the cider, it creates carbon dioxide, which is the bubbles you see, and it creates alcohol. And normally if you start out with about 11% soluble sugars in the beverage, then you're going to end up with 4 or 5% alcohol at the end if it goes all the way to completion.
Wow.
There you go.
Yeah,
thanks so much. Just
don't drink a whole gallon if it's 5%. I mean, that's pretty impressive. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. All right, Peter, let's try the snapdragons here.
Oh.
This is a new thing.
You got a knife?
Can't you just bite it?
Well, if you're a fruit farmer, you always have a fruit knife. So,
okay.
The secret here is that these, I don't know when to pick them. This is a new variety of apple.
They look ripe, right? They're red?
This is the first. Now, red is not a good indication of
that. Okay, now we're getting into this. Why okay. Why not?
Oh, it looks because, a little green.
Because red is a function of sunlight and cold temperatures.
So this really, it could be just as unripe as a green apple.
You see, some apples are genetically modified in order to be red, so you can't usually use that as a great example. But the red color is a function of cold nights and sunshine. And so if you see an apple that's green on one side and red on the other, doesn't mean one side isn't ripe and the other side is.
That's good advice.
And if you look carefully at apples in the store, particularly Macintosh, you'll find out that you can see the outline of where leaves may have lain on the surface of the apple and made it green underneath.
Do they, and I often hear that this, and I don't know if it's true, but do they, some of these large commercial organizations, paint them, color the apples?
No.
No? Oh, you got a knife too. One thing I can always be sure of, Jessica Blaustein Marshall will have a knife handy. All right.
The agenda here is I've got to decide when to pick these apples.
Okay.
I haven't picked them yet. It's somewhere around now. I've measured the pressure. I've measured the soluble sugars. But this is a taste test. Is this a ripe apple you want to eat, or should I wait another few days before I pick them?
And then you have to tell me what you mean by measure the pressure.
Okay.
Well, why don't you do that while I'm chewing this?
Okay. Well, you have a little round thing that you push against the side of the apple when you cut the skin away. And the amount of resistance is an indication of how hard the apple is. As the apple gets a little riper, the resistance goes down. We're down, you know, around 15 pounds pressure here.
Well, this is, I think it's delicious. Ken, what do you think?
It's not overly sweet.
Yeah. I like it.
It's got a nice mixture of tart and...
Yeah, but does it taste a little bit starchy?
It seems a little on the green side.
Wait a minute, hold it. You guys are using term starchy. How can I tell a starchy apple? This tastes like a nice crisp apple to me. What am I missing?
What you're missing is a chance to test a lot of unripe apples and decide it's not time to pick them. And they have a certain taste to them. Now, that we look at other things, too. We look at the seeds. We want the seeds to turn brown.
Right.
And I can see these seeds are a little on the light side.
Yep.
And if I had cut it the other way like I should have, we can see that the seed cavities in the calyx center, they should start to open up and separate, and you got a collection of brown seeds in there. And the other thing is looking at the flesh, there's just a slight green tint to it. I don't know. Maybe
I saw that when you first cut open.
Yeah, and maybe that's the way they're going to be. I don't know.
Are these all the same in a basket?
Yep.
Cut another one.
Okay.
All right. And you know what? Let's take a break. Peter Tenike is going to cut some apples, and Ken Migliarelli is also here, Ray Graff here. Bob and Carl on the phone, hang in there. We're testing some snapdragons and whatnot. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Adirondack Creamery Ice Cream. Crafted with local milk, cream, sugar, and eggs, and no artificial additives, flavors such as pumpkin pie and banana chip available at Adams Faeraker Farms, Whole Foods, and other specialty grocers, AdirondackCreamery.com. Ackerman's Appliance Hudson. For 37 years, a locally owned dealer of appliance brands such as Sub-Zero, Wolf, Blue Star, Bosch, and more, showroom on Warren Street, Ackerman'sAppliance.net. And Cafe Capriccio, Chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain the traditions of Italian cuisine and hospitality since 1982 on Grand Street in Albany, New York. CafeCapriccio.com.
And don't forget, the lockbox is in operation at WAMC.org, WAMC.org. Our fund drive begins a week from Monday morning at 6 a.m., 1 week from Monday. And our goal is to be at the $300,000 mark by that time. If we hit $300,000 by the beginning of the drive, there are $30,000 worth of challenges on the table that will kick in. That'll put us at the one-third mark of the drive before we even open the microphone on Monday, October 6th. So if you want to get us through this drive fast, go to WAMC.org, kick in the lockbox. We are talking apples today on this Food Friday with Peter Tenike of Indian Ladder Farms and Ken Migliarelli of Migliarelli Farm in Northern Dutchess County. And Peter brought a new variety. It's Snapdragon, right?
Snapdragon.
And we're deciding here whether the time is right to pick them. And so you guys are the apple experts. And what's the consensus here?
The expert is the consumer.
I liked it. But I'm easily amused. Yeah. What do you guys think?
I think I'd like to have it stay a couple more days, but there's one exception to that. Because we're looking at the flesh. That's just a slight hint of green there.
Yep.
We're looking at the seeds. They're not fully brown, but maybe these new varieties aren't going to be that way. They're not all the same. But the other thing is the bump test.
What's that?
You go and give a little karate chop to the tree, to one of the branches, and if one of the apples fall on the ground, then... It may be they all of a sudden got ripe, because if I don't get them, there's going to be a windstorm or something, and I'm going to lose a third of them or something like that. So that becomes a practical consideration other than a maturity one.
So, in other words, better to err on the side of picking them a few days early rather than lose them to a windstorm. Ken, you had mentioned that they'll ripen to some extent after they're picked.
Yeah, if you put them in storage for any length of time, they'll ripen on the, you know, they produce ethylene gas, and ethylene gas is what ripens the apple. Now, Pete doesn't do long-term storage, but I do. I put apples in what they call controlled atmosphere,
mm-hmm.
and I'll hold apples for 6 to 8 months. Matter of fact, I just finished apples like a month ago from last year.
Do they still taste good?
Yeah, they taste really good. You basically control the oxygen in the room. Right now, we're breathing 21%. And in this sealed room, we keep the oxygen around 2.5-3%. And we keep the carbon dioxide below a half a percent.
Wow.
So basically, the apple doesn't have enough oxygen to deteriorate. So it's like when you open up the room 4 or 6 or 8 months down the road, it's like the apple was just picked.
How do you get in? You have an airlock of some kind,
no,
like a spaceship?
No, you have to, when you open up the door, and you have to wait a half a day to a day to allow the oxygen, or you know, you'll be dead.
Oh, that's a great idea. All right, let's go back to the phones. Bob in Port Ewing. Bob.
Hi, gentlemen. Good afternoon. I got a quick story and a question. Quick story is my father was an old-timer. He was born in 1884. He was raised on a farm outside of Newburgh. He said that during the winter, they would take a bucket of hard cider and set it out in the cold and let it freeze. And all the alcohol there would form in a little pocket right in the middle of it. And they chop into that with an ice pick and drink it with a straw. Talk about blowing your head off.
Well, Ken's nodding, so he may have tried this on his own.
Well, I know old-timers used to take, and they put a tub of cider right level with the ground with a cloth over it. And then the water would tend to freeze on the top and the alcohol wouldn't. And then you skim the ice off, and you keep skimming the ice off, so you're taking the water out of it, and then the alcohol is staying there, and you get the time to get to spring. One cup of that will set you free.
My father said you could always tell a cider drunk because they always sell backwards. But anyway, when we bought our house, we had an old apple tree in the backyard, and was still making a few apples. They were, you know, fair size. And I took one down to the Cornell Center. They said they thought it was a Ben Davis. Can you still get a Ben Davis apple?
It's a heritage type apple, and I'm sure some people have it, but Ben Davis, the one thing about a Ben Davis was that they said it used to keep like a pine knot, and the only trouble is it also tasted like a pine
knot. Oh.
So they crossed the Ben Davis with a Macintosh and to try to get an apple that had really great taste, and it lasted a long, long time. And they, out of all those crosses, they selected one and that they liked a lot. And the flesh didn't turn brown very easily. And it was bigger than a Macintosh and a little bit redder. And they gave it the dumb name of Cortland.
Ah, that's...
Now, who, really?
That's Cortland, huh?
Who are they?
The folks at the experiment station in Geneva, the researchers, were in charge of that.
Hmm.
Cortland, huh?
Very interesting. Bob, thanks a lot for the call.
Yeah, I'll have to try that. Thank you very much.
How many varieties do you have at Indian Ladder, Peter?
It's a scandal. It's got to be at least 50.
50 different varieties, including the Snapdragon?
Yeah.
And how many trees would you say that you have of the new variety?
Well, I've got 2,000 or 3,000 trees of these, but that doesn't mean much because they're all planted so close together. I'm planting at least 10 or 15 trees. Ken and I are where one tree used to grow when we were growing up. They're closer and closer together, smaller and smaller trees.
It's an economic decision?
Well, the name of the game is that each leaf on a tree is a factory, and it's producing food that's going to feed the apple, and we're hoping to take the production off the tree and sell it for a profit. So we want to intercept the largest percentage of the light that would have fallen on an acre of ground and turn it into something profitable. And so the latest state of the art is that Ken and I are planting trees that are only about 13 feet apart on the rows and about 3 feet apart between the trees. And we want to get one tree to go straight up, and that way we can, in theory, get a little more than 70% of all the sunlight on an acre into production.
Yeah, on the older plantings, they're getting like 400 or 500 bushels to the acre. With this new type of system, we're getting 1,500 to 2,000 bushels to the acre. But the tree cannot support itself, so you have to trellis it.
Is there a law of diminishing returns?
I'm sure there is.
Yeah, there is, and it's right around 1,000 to 1,100 trees to the acre, so says Terrence.
Oh, okay.
And you get a little more if you go to higher density, but you pay more than you get back.
Right. Huh.
Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. We talk apples today with Peter Ten Eyck of Indian Ladder and Ken Migliarelli of Migliarelli Farm. Back to the phones we go. Carl and Palatine. Carl, you're up.
Hello. Count Graf.
Hello. How are you?
All right, my friend. Not far from Rokovi and Migliori, as you go to the Clinton Bridge, the Kingston-Rhinecliff Bridge, there, stand there is excellent. Below Red Hook.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
My question, I was given a gift of a jar of vintage cider, hard cider.
Okay.
That's all I was told.
All right.
And they said, here, enjoy. So I did about two-thirds of the jar.
Oh, boy.
I then showed it to a friend. There's a label on it from a particular, grower. And with my poor reading glasses, I showed it to a friend who said, this is 30 years old.
Wow.
It's from a barrel 30 years. I said, what?
Did you drink it today?
I beg pardon?
Oh, did you drink it today?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
No, I have a surgical problem from cancer surgery.
No, he's not saying that. He's saying... No, he didn't mean that at all. Can you drink cider that's 30 years old? That's the question.
I sure did.
And he lived.
I'm here. This was several days ago. Now, I'm not talking about a gallon. This is a small jar.
Yeah, well...
But when my neighbor said, Frank, what's wrong with you? This is a 30-year-old vintage something or other.
Is that normal, guys? Is that a normal thing to have a vintage?
Well, once you take the product that we grow, that we want people to have fresh, and you start manipulating it, you turn it into hard cider, or then you take and increase the amount of alcohol and make it into something like Calvados or something else like that. You're in another world then.
Yeah,
you're out of food.
That's exactly what I was thinking about. I remember years ago, Calvados, some kind of French green apples or something, and they made this fantastically expensive cognac bourbon.
Wow.
What in the heck?
That's cool.
What in the heck is a 30-year-old hard cider from presumably green apples?
Wow, Carl, you never cease to amaze me, man. Good call. No. Thank you very much. Doesn't it turn to vinegar at some point?
Well, the yeast is what converts the sugar to carbon dioxide and to alcohol.
Right.
But bacteria, if that gets in there, then that will make the sugars go to vinegar.
Uh-huh. And so that's why you pasteurize?
Well, that's why if you're making hard cider, you put an airlock on there so that the carbon dioxide that's produced by the yeast can get out of the barrel, but no air can get in. Because
right.
If the oxygen gets in, then the bacteria will take off and you'll go the wrong fork in the road and you'll go to vinegar.
All right, let's go to Scott in Ulster Park. Scott.
How you doing? I was wondering if anybody there grows what's called an Aesopus spitzer.
Spitzenberg.
Spitzenberg. I'm sorry, I'm out hiking and I couldn't remember off the top of my head what the name of it was. It was an heirloom variety that I read about.
Probably both of us do. You have some?
No, I don't have any. I don't have any heirloom
varieties.
Well, now,
the Aesopus Spitzenberg is a really great apple because it tastes good and it looks pretty nice, but it's a magnet for disease of one type or another, particularly fire blight and a few things like that. And it also is a shy bearer. You don't get many of them. And so while I've grown it and people are excited about it, and Thomas Jefferson wrote in his garden book, he actually sent somebody up into the Hudson Valley to get some of those Aesopus Spitzenbergs and take them back down to Monticello. And in fact, they have some of those trees growing there right now out of respect for that. But it's a tough thing. It's a tough apple to grow.
So not economically too viable.
That's right.
Okay.
So you have those in stock now, and I'd like to know what the name of your orchard is. I'm from the town of Aesopus, and I'd like to try them.
Well, we're Indian Ladder Farms, and we're a fair piece from where you are. We're between the communities of Voorheesville and Aldemont, and the time period on Spitzenbergs is about the third week in October.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Scott, and you'll love Indian Ladder Farms. It is I've been going there since I was a little kid, and it's we take our kids now, and there are farm animals, which they never had, I don't think, when I was a little kid.
Yeah, we got all...
It's all about the entertainment now,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, and I get grumpy about that. I want to be in the farming business. I want to We want to raise food. We want people to understand where their food comes from and have them engage in the actual product itself. And so these other little things that I have to do primarily those things that I do is because the risk of growing things is a big hurdle to get over. And you got to have something to fall back on if that doesn't work out.
So it evens out the finances if necessary.
That's right. It's a kind of insurance.
Well, it's all about showbiz now, too. So, yeah. You know, that's what the kids like. All right, back to the phones we go. Jane and Hadley. Hi, Jane, you're on.
Hi, I have a question. I like to buy organic fruit whenever I can. I know out here UMass Orchards has low spray and integrated pest management. Orchards, tell me what the latest is in terms of spraying pesticides in orchards and what you folks do.
Yeah, well, what you said, the IPM, Integrated Pest Management, we're out there scouting and seeing the insect and disease pressures. And, you know, our first choice is always to go to biologicals, which are similar to what organic farmers use. But sometimes that's not always the case, and we have to use other crop protectants.
We our game plan, we've looked at organic. I farm with a group of growers who are called Eco Apple, and there are only a dozen of us this year, and most of them are in New England. And our agenda is to find a kinder and gentler way to grow apples. I just want to grow apples that any little kid can pick an apple off the tree in the fall, and they're not going to have any pesticides on it.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's rocket science. I think Ken's probably doing exactly the same thing. The other aspects of organic are other features that are in addition to just having a program where you don't have any residues on or in your apples that are harmful to people, and that's the space that I want to be in.
Jane, you want to follow up?
Nope, that's it. Great, thanks.
Thanks a lot for the call. Well, you mentioned heirloom varieties earlier. I assume that they're heirlooms for a reason, and that they don't handle pests all that well, or diseases affect them more. One would assume that the state of the art, as far as what species you grow, are it is getting better all the time.
Yeah, I think there's an evolution, Ken, right? The new apples are better than some of the older ones, but the fact of the matter is there are thousands of varieties of apples. Cornell has is the gene repository for pome fruits for apples in Geneva, New York, and they have two specimens growing. Plus, they have tissue cryogenically frozen of more than 2,000, probably close to 3,000 varieties of apples. So the number of possibilities for different kinds of apples is
endless.
Is endless. And the heirloom ones, see, the early settlers, the French Canadians and things, brought apples over here from Europe. They planted them and they grew up. And most of them died because the climates weren't good for them.
Yeah.
Okay. So the birds took seeds, or deer did, and planted them in the orchards. And then we sort of rediscovered in the late 1700s what we thought were naturally occurring apple varieties. There are no native apple varieties in North America.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Most varieties come from Asia. There's probably about 7,000-8,000 varieties of that's their origin.
So the ones that we have now are the modern apple varieties that Susan Brown, who's the director of the program for developing new fruit varieties, they'll plant several thousand seedlings, okay? And then they subject them to things like fire blight and scab and things of that type, and most all of them die. And you're only left with a few hundred left. Okay, so now that's what you start with.
Right.
Then you plant them, and you grow up the apples, and then you try to find out where they are in terms of soluble sugars and taste and stuff like that.
Right.
Then you're not done though, because then you have to have how are they going to fare in other climates around the state? Are they sensitive to frost? Are they sensitive to winter injury? And then we got to find out if they're shy bearers, where you don't get many of them every year. Then you got to find out, are they alternate bearers, where they only, because a lot of trees only want a bear every other year.
They're biennial.
They're biennial. And so you have to work all those things out. So if you can get down to developing a new apple variety in under 20 years, you've done a good job.
Is there a perfect variety for this area? And I know you guys, microclimate-wise, Migliarelli being in Dutchess, you being in Albany County?
Yeah.
Yeah. Must be slightly different, but is there a perfect variety that you would go for?
Basically, all our apples fall into that category.
Right.
Well, that's a cop-out.
Well, no, there isn't a perfect variety.
Well, like Max and Honeycrisp do really well up in the Adirondacks.
Yeah.
They like a really cold, and up in Canada also. So they really like a cold climate.
But is there one that it works best? You get the most, it tastes great, and it's fairly pest and disease resistant in this neck of the woods.
Mm. Well, I think weather-wise is the important thing, that it's a little bit warmer where we are. So we get a little bit redder, a little bit harder Mac. And it's looking like Honeycrisp falls into that category, too, that we get a little bit better one. And if you go up to Peru, New York, or Chazy, Plattsburgh
yeah.
area, they'll have a harder and redder Mac and a little bit better Honeycrisp,
right.
too.
Right.
And that's because of the growing season. The problem is that things like Granny Smith is an apple variety that we see around a lot. They don't grow well around here. A lot of people have Honeycrisp. Granny Smith. Because it's a kind of apple that you can eat even if it isn't ripe.
Right.
I mean, it has a certain climate that it can grow in, but it has, the growing season's about 170 days. You don't probably have a 170-day growing season, do
no,
you?
No, it's 130.
Yeah. And so you can pick them, but they're not really ripe.
Mm. I see a lot of galas around. Are they all imported, or are they
no,
domestic as well?
We can grow
galas.
That's
what we're
good.
Picking. We just got done picking
yeah.
galas.
They're tasty. All right, let's take a break here, Mr. Zach. 1-800-348-2551. I apologize profusely to those on the line. We're having such a good time. I didn't take your calls. Not really a good call-in show host. We'll rectify that coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Schenectady Green Market, a community marketplace providing fresh local produce and artisan goods every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. around City Hall, schenectadygreenmarket.org. Berkshire Bach, presenting the St. Luke's Chamber Ensemble, performing Mozart, Bach, and Vivaldi's Four Seasons, Saturday at 7:30 p.m. at the Mahewi, berkshirebach.org. And Sundog Cider at Solaqua, locally produced hard cider from New York Hudson Valley apples, unfiltered, naturally gluten-free, handcrafted at a revitalized solar-powered mill in Chatham, New York. SundogCider.com.
One 1-800-348-2551 is the number, and to the phones we go immediately. Josephine and Rhinebeck. Josephine, you're on.
Good afternoon. I'm having a wonderful time listening to this show.
Oh, thank you.
I'm a real apple person. I eat apples all year round. Usually at least one, very often two a day.
Mm. All right, now we're
yeah.
talking.
Okay, now I have a question about something that you were talking about a little while ago. You said that there's a new variety, and it's something that had been crossed with a Ben David and a McIntosh and three or four others that they were crossed with until they finally got to a variety that they believed everybody would like. And now it's called, and then they mentioned the name, and everybody made a big noise, and I couldn't get the name of the new variety.
All right, Peter.
Well, start with it's not new. It's called Cortland.
Oh, Cortland.
But it's a very old variety.
Yes, I've had that. That's one of my favorites.
Yes.
Oh, so it's a Cortland. So it's not a new variety as a result of
right.
all these cross breedings.
Don't you taste a little of that Ben Davis in there when you have one?
I don't know. I never had a Ben David. If I did,
Davis.
I wasn't aware of it.
Well, Ben Davis is something you guys have at the Indian Ladder?
No, it's not a good apple. It was just a very good keeping apple. And
oh, that's right. Yeah, now I remember why they were crossing it with others because of, yeah, okay.
Well, Josephine, thanks a lot for the call.
Yeah, I have another question.
Okay.
Sometimes when I buy apples, they have a shiny a surface. Is that something that is added to help them keep longer?
Yeah, that was my question earlier. I said, do they paint them? That was an
inartful
way of saying
it. It's called a bloom.
Oh, no, not paint them. I didn't think
I didn't really mean with paint, but...
That's called a bloom.
And what is that?
It's just naturally found on apples.
Well, the apple's 100% relative humidity inside, and the air might be 50 or 60. It doesn't want to dry out, so it makes a wax coating that goes on the surface.
Naturally?
Yeah. And then the old layers of wax slough off and form this gray film on the outside of the apple, which people think are deadly pesticides or stuff like that. But it's just the old layers going off.
Oh, see, I always thought that was wax that was added to keep it fresh.
Well, now, if you buy apples in the chain stores, very often they have wax added. And I get into these arguments with the chain. They say we're slave to the consumer, that we put out a regular bin of apples that are not very shiny, and then we have the ones that are waxed, and they're real shiny. That's what they buy, so that's what we have to do. And so when they get done, with that, I say, well, now, excuse me, ma'am, does that mean that if I set up a $75,000 apple waxer on the other side of the checkout counter, and you came through and I said, excuse me, ma'am, would you like me to put a foreign substance on your apple?
Oh, boy, yeah, you're
right.
You're
going to say yes.
That's a good point. And thank you for using the term apple waxer. I don't think we've ever used that on the radio. Josephine, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Lynn in Shelburne Falls. Lynn.
Hi. Thanks for giving a call.
Sure.
This is a great program. I never knew how much apples were such a difficult crop, but I'm sure they are. And I've got a couple questions, if you don't mind.
Okay.
But the Honeycrisp, why are they so expensive? That's my favorite apple, Honeycrisp.
Are they overly expensive?
They are.
Why?
Well, they're a pain to grow.
Are they really? What's so difficult about them?
Well, it's just they're very finicky. You have to make sure your calcium levels are proper. And then the yields, we've been getting into this biennial thing.
Yeah, strongly biennial.
Really?
Well, they only want to bear every other year.
Well, that explains that.
So we definitely use more time on the Honeycrisp than we do it with any other varieties.
Okay.
And
Lynn, what was your other question?
I wanted to ask you, how are you doing with honeybees?
We don't have a problem. I basically hire a company that starts down in Florida and works right up the coast up into Maine. So he just moves his bees from farm to farm as the weather warms from the south to the north. And we haven't had any trouble getting bees.
How about you, Peter?
Well, we use a local beekeeper. But nationally, there is a big problem. Over 50% of all the bees in the United States go and pollinate almonds in California in February.
Really?
And then they get shipped around. They do blueberries in Maine. And so commercially, there's a lot of things about bees now that are a problem. One of them could possibly be a pesticide issue, but mostly they're nutritional issues. And there are not enough wildflowers, there are not enough things. The big mega growers are feeding their bees sugar water and things during the off season because they have nothing for them to eat.
Amazing. Yeah.
So what we need is more wildflowers. We need more alternate sources for beekeepers to use.
Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Sharla in Pinebush, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Two questions. One I think you may have answered. My neighbor has an apple tree. I don't know what kind, but this year it didn't come to fruition. Is that common? But basically, I also want to ask about northern spies and why they are not marketed. And are they? Do they skip a year?
A northern spy is a great apple. It's an outstanding apple. It's a very, very slow coming into bearing. If you planted a standard seed in the ground for a northern spy, you wouldn't get an apple for 10 years.
Oh.
And the other thing is they're wickedly biennial in their bearing. They only bear every other year.
And then
they have the skin bruises very easily, and it's a very difficult apple to handle.
Okay. All right. And then there are other apples that just don't come to fruition every year. Is that right?
Right. You're probably that tree is probably in a biennial thing.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Over to Bernadette in New Paltz. Bernadette.
Hi. I feel like an apple person. I grew up in Elmira, which is close to Ithaca. None of this was intentional. I lived in Utica for a couple of years. We picked apples for a while. I've lived in Boston Spa and apple orchards. I moved to Hershey, Pennsylvania in the apartment complex I lived in right next door. It was an apple orchard. I mean, there's probably other places I've lived around. New Paul's has apple orchards. And my Chinese sign is snake.
I'll be darned.
So I'm curious what kind of climate and environment you have to grow apple trees.
Okay. Well, you're living in it. The Northeast is a great area for apple production. And then the West Coast, the Northwest Coast is also a great area for Washington State is... New York State is number two in apple. We produce about 30 million bushels of apples a year, and Washington State probably produces 130 million bushels a year.
Wow.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bernadette.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551 is our number on this Food Friday as we talk apples with Peter Ten Eyck of Indian Ladder Farms in Altamont, New York, and Ken Migliarelli of Migliarelli Farm in Northern Dutchess County. What's the town that you're in?
Red Hook.
Okay, let's go over to Dot in Niskayuna. Hiya, Dot, you're up.
Hi. I have a question, or just some information for Peter and Ken. I wonder if they're familiar with a set of books that I inherited from my husband's grandfather, who got his PhD from Cornell around the turn of the century. And these were published by the New York Agricultural Experiment Station, 1903. And they're the apples of New York, the peaches of New York, the pears of New York, the plums of New York, the cherries of New York. Are you familiar with that set of books?
Yes, I do have a set of those books. Dr. Beach did the one on apples.
And yes, it's a, I have
it's an excellent reference for a lot of apples that nobody's ever heard of.
Oh, my goodness. There's so many apples in here. Yeah. And the books are just beautiful. The prints and the plates in them.
Well, don't cut them up. Don't cut them up for
the
prints.
Oh, no, I won't.
All right.
No, I'm trying to take care of them. As I said, as you can tell, they're very old. My father-in-law was there when they were published. Mm. And or my grandfather-in-law was who he would have been. So I was just wondering if you were familiar with them. They're absolutely beautiful, and we treasure them.
Well, thanks, Dot. We appreciate the call. Are there any in that book, Peter, that you say, gosh, we haven't seen this around here in 40 years. Let's try growing them?
No, I think I'm a little smarter than that.
So they're not around for a reason?
For the most part.
Okay, let's go back to Patty and Otis. Hiya, Patty.
Hey, Ray. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. So I was calling to just kind of clarify something that the very first caller, when he talked about his cider that he forgot about and it turned to hard cider, I wanted to clarify, is that like, for any apple ciders, because I do that all the time where I use half of one and forget, and then it, you know, or I open it up and it goes, you know, when I open it, with, and I always throw it out because I'm afraid to drink it. So is it safe to drink because it's just become hard cider?
Absolutely. Yeah, you could drink it. Matter of fact, I know people that set their cider out and let it get a little carbonation to it. They like it like that.
Yeah, the farmers used to call getting the bees in it. You get a. I take a half a gallon cider by the half gallon, and I'll leave one in the ice box. The other one I'll set on the counter for 24 hours, maybe 48 hours. Then I put it in the refrigerator. Just start to work a little bit. So I don't do it for the alcohol, but just for the little bit of carbonation, and the sugar goes down, so it's not quite so sweet, and it's an outstanding beverage.
Right, but is it? Should I only do that, or is it only safe if it's in its original seal? If I open it, use half of it, and then forget about it, has the oxygen now got it? And what you talked about before, that now the oxygen makes bacteria.
No,
so
I think you'll be all right in the scenario you described. You're going to be just fine.
Oh, okay. And a lot of times I end up putting it into a soup or something, so then it's being cooked off and I would think would kill the bacteria. And then a second quick question, my husband and I just cleared an area. We live in Otis, so, you know, up a mountain, it's, you know, colder. And we wanted to put in a couple of apple trees, and I'm wondering what particular varieties you might think might just be easier for the beginner to grow and get apples
from.
Great
question.
Well, the first thing you got to do is make sure that you can have a pollinator, because almost every apple has to be cross-pollinated to get fruit. So
right, it has to be two trees.
Yeah, and if you don't have any within a half a mile of where you are, then you have to consider that. The second thing is you don't want to get in the game of doing a lot of maintenance of the fruit. So you want to go to disease-resistant varieties, ones
Very
that have been developed
so.
That aren't going to get apple scab and they're not going to get fire blight. And, you know, Liberty is a good one. Freedom is another one. Some of these, you see them in catalogs. They're pretty annual producers, but don't be planting a lot of them because I can't stand the competition.
Uh-huh.
Oh no, we have room. We think for like four or six, you know, but no competition. We're just trying to do it for fun. But so you think like Liberty or Freedom might be good varieties.
And there are many others too that you just got to research a little bit.
Okay, great. Thanks,
Patty. Thanks. We'll see you at the fun drive. Okay.
Yeah, I'll see you next week.
All right. Bye bye. Let's go to Eileen and Socrates. Eileen.
Oh, hi. I was interested in what you were saying about the bees. I know they've been struggling for a few years now. I'm glad to know that you've got a supply that helps you. But my question was, do you think there'd be any point in growers like yourselves banding together and maybe petitioning, or whatever the right word is, the USDA to ban the neonicotinoids that are responsible for a lot of the bee deaths that we've seen? They're banned in Europe already. But we won't ban them here because we don't want the companies to lose money that make them. So I just wondered if you guys ever would band together and try to get that sort of thing gotten rid of in America.
Well, I happen to be involved in the bee issue because the state has a group that the legislature has to appoint through the commissioner. Mm-hmm. And there has to be one person on that group that's not a beekeeper. And somehow I wasn't smart enough not to be that person. And I can tell you, it's a really complicated issue, and the problem is not get rid of neonicotinoids and we're home safe. And if you wanted to call me sometime, we could have a conversation about that.
Oh, I'd love to. And I know there are several other reasons, viruses and funguses and whatnot, but I just wondered if you were interested in that. I'm glad to know you are.
Yeah, well, thanks, Eileen.
Is this Peter I was just talking
yes,
to?
Yes, we're talking to Peter.
Thank you both, but have a good day. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye now. Over to Paul in Granville. Paul, you're up.
Hi. I'm currently on job picking apples, but I've been a longtime fan of organic foods for the reasons, obviously, that most people like organics. Question I have is, if you know that you're working with a sprayed crop, do you guys wear gloves? And then secondly, what's the best way to wash apples to remove as much of the residue as you can?
Well, we have to suit up when we're using any crop protectants, and just over your faucet water would be fine. What little residue might be on the apple.
So even with the waxy layer that and I understand a lot of pesticides are applied in sort of detergent mixes or with some amount of oil to allow for wetting, et cetera.
Well, the thing to remember is the FDA samples about 20,000 samples of fruits and vegetables every year, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they find right. about 0.5% are outside of what they consider to be safe tolerances. Somebody used something on a crop that they shouldn't have or the residue's too high.
Mm-hmm.
But just pretty close to half of all those samples have no detectable residues of anything down to parts per billion. I think that's where Ken and I are farming. There are places that don't do that, that make up the other thing. But believe me, I wouldn't be in this game if I felt my apples were laced with some kinds of residues you had to get in there and scrub off.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I guess that's another good reason to buy local.
Mm-hmm. Sounds right.
Paul, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye now. Let's go to Mark in Rhinebeck. Mark, you only have about 30 seconds here. I apologize.
Yeah, I just want to know, you see apples come in from the West, and it says organic apples or from any place. How do you grow an organic apple? Because I used to live on an apple farm.
Well, the word organic is owned by the USDA, and so you have to have a certification to grow organic. They come and inspect. And you'll see more organic apples coming from the West Coast more because Washington State has half the disease and half the insect pressures that we deal with on the Northeast. So you're more out to see more organic apples from Washington State.
All right, Mark, thank you. We got to leave it there. Well, I appreciate you guys being here. Peter Ten Eyck of Indian Ladder. We'll see you at the farm very shortly here in the next week or so. And also want to thank Ken for being here. Good luck at Migliorelli down there. You guys got a busy couple of weeks, a couple of months ahead.
Absolutely.
Got everybody from Bard College coming to your place, right?
Yep. Till Thanksgiving, and then it tails off a little bit.
Well, this was great. And thanks to everybody for listening and all those who called in. Support comes from Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tastings Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. And Washington County Tourism, presenting the Washington Local Development Corporation Washington County Business Showcase October 2nd at Christ the King, Greenwich, Washington, nycounty.com. Thanks to Zach Malloy for handling the controls all week long. Our phones were answered by Colleen O'Connell, our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. She's good with a knife. Thanks for joining us on Vox Pop today. On Monday at this time, Alan Shartok will be here with a Medical Monday. Don't forget to feed the lockbox. Have a great weekend.